4. Alucard! 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 Chanted the crowd. Lila had missed the beginning of the fight, but it didn't matter. Her captain was winning. The eastern arena was filled to capacity, the lower levels shoulder to shoulder, while the upper tiers afforded worse views but a little more air. Lila had opted for one of the highest tiers open to the public, balancing the desire to study the match with the need to maintain anonymity. Stacion's black hat perched on her brow, and she leaned her elbows on the railing and watched dark earth swirl around Alucard's fingers. She imagined she could see his smile, even from this height. Prince Rai, who'd appeared a few minutes before, cheeks flushed from traveling between the stadiums, now stood on the royal balcony and watched with rapt attention, the stern-looking Faerûn noble at his shoulder. Two poles rose above the royal platform, each bearing a pennant to mark the match. Alucard's was a silver feather, or a drop of flame, she couldn't tell, against a background of dark blue. She held a copy in one hand. The other pennant bore a set of three stacked white triangles on forest green. Alucard's opponent, a Vescan named Otto, wore an ancient-looking helmet with a nose plate and a domed skull. Otto had chosen fire to Alucard's earth, and both were now dancing and dodging each other's blows. The smooth stone of the arena floor was dotted with obstacles, rock formations offering cover as well as the chance for ambush, and they must have been warded, since Alucard never made them move. Otto was surprisingly quick on his feet for a man nearly 7 feet tall, but his skill was one of blunt force, while Alucard's was sleight of hand. Lila couldn't think of it any other way. Most magicians, just like most ordinary fighters, gave away their attack by moving in the same direction as their magic. But Alucard could stand perfectly still while his element moved, or in this case, could dodge one way and send his power another, and through that simple effective method, had scored 8 hits to Otto's 2. Alucard was a showman, adding flourish and flair, and Lila had been on the receiving end of his games enough times to see that he was now playing with the Vescan, shifting into a defensive mode to prolong the fight and please the crowd. A cheer rose from the western arena, where Kisimir was going up against her protege Losen, and moments later the words on the nearest bracket board shifted, Losen's name vanishing, and Kisimir's writing itself into the advancing spot. In the arena below, flames circled Otto's fists. The hardest thing about fire was putting force behind it, giving it weight as well as heat. The Vescan was throwing his own weight behind the blows instead of using the fire's strength. "Magic is like the ocean," Alucard had told her in her first lesson. "When waves go the same way, they build. When they collide, they cancel. Get in the way of your magic and you break the momentum. Move with it and..." The air around Lila began to tingle pleasantly. "Master Tyrion," she said without turning. The Arven Essen stepped up beside her.
"Master Stacion," he said casually. "Shouldn't you be getting ready?"
"I fight last," she said, shooting him a glance. "I wanted to see Alucard's match."
"Supporting friends?"
She shrugged. "Studying opponents?"
"I see."
Tyrion gave her an appraising look, or perhaps it was disapproving. He was a hard man to read, but Lila liked him. Not just because he didn't try to stop her, but because she could ask him questions, and he clearly didn't believe in protecting a person by keeping them in the dark. He'd entrusted her with a difficult task once, he'd kept her secrets twice, and he'd let her choose her own path at every turn. Lila nodded at the royal box. "The prince seems keen on this match," she ventured, as down below Otto narrowly escaped a blow. "But who is the Faerûn?"
Lord Solin Ar, said Tirin, the older brother of the king. Lila frowned. Shouldn't being the eldest make him the king? In Pharaoh, the descent of the crown is not determined by the order of birth, but by the priests. Lord Solin Ar has no affinity for magic. Thus he cannot be king. Lila could hear the distaste in Tirin's voice, and she could tell it wasn't for Solin Ar, but for the priests who deemed him unworthy. She didn't buy into all that nonsense about magic sorting the strong from the weak, making some kind of spiritual judgment. No, that was too much like fate, and Lila didn't put much stock in that. A person chose their path, or they made a new one. How do you know so much? She asked.
I've spent my life studying magic.
I didn't think we were talking about magic.
We were talking about people, he said,
his eyes following the match.
And people are the most variable and important component in the equation of magic. Magic itself is, after all, a constant, a pure and steady source like water. People and the world they shape, they are the conduits of magic, determining its nature, colouring its energy, the way a dye does water. You of all people should be able to see that magic changes in the hands of men. It is an element to be shaped. As for my interest in Pharaoh and Vesk, the Arnesian Empire is vast. It is not, however, the extent of the world. And last time I endeavoured to check, magic existed beyond its borders. I'm glad of the Essentash, if only for that reminder, and for the chance to see how magic is treated in other lands.
I hope you've written this all down somewhere, she said. For posterity and all. He tapped the side of his head.
I keep it someplace safe.
Lila snorted. Her attention drifted back to Solin Ar. Men talked, and men at sea talked more than most. Is it true what they say?
I wouldn't know, Master Elsor. I don't stay apprised.
She doubted he was half as naive as he seemed. That Lord Solin Ar wants to overthrow his brother and start a war? Tirin brought his hand down on her shoulder, his grip surprisingly firm.
Mind that tongue of yours, he said quietly. There are too many ears for such careless remarks.
They watched the rest of the match in silence. It didn't last long. Alucard was a blur of light, his helmet winking in the sun as he spun behind a boulder and around the other side. Lila watched, mesmerized, as he lifted his hands, and the earth around him shot forward. Otto pulled his fire around him like a shell, shielding front and back and every side. Which was great, except he obviously couldn't see through the blaze, so he didn't notice the moment the earth changed direction and flew up into the air, pulling itself together into clods before it fell, not with ordinary force, but raining down in a blur. The crowd gasped, and the Vesken looked up too late. His hands shot skyward, and so did the fire, but not fast enough. Three of the missiles found their mark, colliding with shoulder and forearm and knee, hard enough to shatter the armor plates. In a burst of light, the match was over. An official, a priest, judging by his white robes, held a gold ring to his lips and said,
Alucard Emery advances!
The crowd thundered with applause, and Lila looked up at the royal platform, but the prince was gone. She glanced around, already knowing that Tirin was too. Trumpets sounded from the central arena. Lila saw that Jinnar had advanced. She scanned the list for the central arena's next match. Tas on Mir read the top name, and just below it, Kamarov.
The magic sang in Kel's blood as the crowd roared in the arena above. Saints, had every single person in Red London turned up to witness the opening rounds? Jinnar passed him in the tunnel on the way out of his match. It didn't even look like he'd broken a sweat.
Belshas,
called the silver-eyed magician, peeling off the remains of his armor. By the looks of it, he'd only broken 3 plates. Rensatov, answered Kel automatically as his chest hummed with nervous energy. What was he thinking? What was he doing here? This was all a mistake. And yet, his muscles and bones still ached for a fight, and beyond the tunnel he could hear them calling the name Kamarov, Kamarov, Kamarov. And even though it wasn't his, it still sent a fresh burst of fire through his veins. His feet drifted forward of their own accord to the mouth of the tunnel, where 2 attendants waited, a table between them.
"The rules have been well explained," asked the first. "And you are ready, willing, and able?" prompted the second.
Kel nodded. He'd seen enough tournament matches to know the way things worked, and Rye had insisted on running through each and every one of them again just to make sure. As the tournament went on, the rules would shift to allow for longer, harder matches. The Essentosh would become far more dangerous then, for Kel and Rye both. But the opening rounds were simply meant to separate the good from the very good, the skilled from the masters.
"Your first element?" prompted the first.
A selection of glass spheres sat on the table, much like the ones that Kel had once used to try to teach Rye magic. Each sphere contained an element: dark earth, tinted water, colored dust to give the wind shape, and in the case of fire, a palmful of oil to create the flame. Kel's hand drifted over the orbs as he tried to decide which one he should pick. As an Antari, he could wield any of them. As Kamarov, he would have to choose. His hand settled on a sphere containing water, stained a vivid blue, so it would be visible to the spectators once he entered the arena. The 2 attendants bowed, and Kel stepped out into the arena, ushered forth on a wave of noise. He squinted up through his visor. It was a sunny winter day, the cold biting, but the light bright, glinting off the arena's spires and the metallic thread in the banners that waved from every direction. The lions on Kel's pennant winked at him from all around the arena, while Tassan Mir's silver-blue spiral spun out here and there against its black ground. Her twin sister Tosan Mir sported the inverse, black on silver-blue. The drama and spectacle had always seemed silly from afar. But standing here, on the arena floor instead of up in the stands, Kel felt himself getting caught up in the show. The chanting, cheering crowd pulsed with energy, with magic. His heart thrummed, his body eager for the fight, and he looked up past the crowds to the royal platform where Rye had taken his place beside the king, looking down. Their eyes met, and even though Rye couldn't possibly see Kel's through his mask, he still felt the look pass between them like a taut string being plucked. "Do not try to get us both killed." Rye gave a single, almost imperceptible nod from the balcony, and Kel wove between the stone obstacles to the center of the arena. Tassan Mir had already entered the ring. She was clothed, like all Ferrowans, in a single piece of wrapped fabric, its details lost beneath her armor. A simple helmet did more to frame her face than mask it, and silver-blue gems shone like beads of sweat along her brow and down her cheeks. In one hand, she held an orb filled with red powder. A wind mage. Kel's mind raced. Air was one of the easiest elements to move and one of the hardest to fight. But force came easy, and precision did not. A priest in white robes stood on a plinth atop the lowest balcony to officiate the match. He motioned, and the 2 came forward, nodded to the royal platform, and then faced each other, each holding out their sphere. The sand in Tassan Mir's orb began to swirl, while the water in Kel's sloshed lazily. Then either silence fell across the stadium, or Kel's pulse drowned out everything, the crowds, the flapping pennants, the distant cheers from other matches. Somewhere in that void of noise, the spheres fell, and the first sound that reached Kel's ears was the crystalline sound of them shattering against the arena floor. For an instant, the blood in Kel's veins quickened, and the world around him slowed. And then, just as suddenly, it snapped back into motion. The Ferrowan's wind leaped up and began to coil around her. The dark water swirled around Kell's arms before pooling above his palms. The Ferrowan jerked, and the red-tinted wind shot forth with spear-like force. Kell lunged back just in time to dodge one blow, and he missed the second as it smashed against his side, shattering a plate and showering the arena in light. The blow knocked Kell's breath away. He stole a glance up at Rye in the royal box and saw him gripping his chair and gritting his teeth. At a glance, it could have passed for concentration, but Kell knew it for what it was, an echo of his own pain. He uttered a silent apology, then dove behind the nearest mound of rock, narrowly escaping another hit. He rolled and came to his feet, grateful the armor was designed to respond only to attacks, not self-inflicted force. Up above, Rye gave him a withering look. Kell considered the two pools of water still hovering above his hands and imagined Holland's voice echoing around the arena, tangled in the wind. Taunting. Fight. Shielded by the rock, he held up one hand, and the watery sphere above his fingers began to unravel into two streams, and then four, and then eight. The cords circled the arena from opposite sides, stretching thinner and thinner, into ribbons, and then threads, and then filaments, crisscrossing into a web. In response, the red wind picked up, sharpening the way his water had, a dozen razors of air. Tassanmir was trying to force him out. Kell winced as a sliver of wind nicked his cheek. His opponent's voice began to carry on the air from a dozen places, and to the rest of the arena, it would look like Kell was fighting blind. But Kell could feel the Ferrowan, the blood and magic pulsing beneath her skin, the tension against the threads of water as he pulled them taut.
Where? There.
He spun, launching himself not to the side, but up. He mounted the boulder, the second orb freezing the instant before it left his hand. It splintered as it hurtled toward Tassanmir, who managed to summon a shield out of her wind before the shards could hit. But she was so focused on the attack from the front that she'd forgotten the web of water, which had reformed in the span of a second into a block of ice behind her. It crashed into her back, shattering the three plates that guarded her spine. The crowd erupted as the Ferrowan fell forward to her hands and knees, and the water sailed back to Kell's side and twined around his wrists. It had been a feint, the same one he'd used on Holland. But unlike the Antari, Tassanmir didn't stay down. A moment later, she was back on her feet, the red wind whipping around her as the broken plates fell away.
Three down, thought Kell, seven to go.
He smiled behind his mask, and then they both became a blur of light and wind and ice. Rye's knuckles tightened on the arms of his chair. Below, Kell ducked and dodged the Ferrowan's blows. Even as Kamarov, he was incredible. He moved around the arena with staggering grace, barely touching the ground. Rye had only seen his brother fight in scuffles and brawls. Was this what he'd looked like when he'd faced Holland? Or Athos Dane? Or was this the product of the months spent in the basin, driven by his own demons? Kell landed another hit, and Rye found himself fighting back a laugh. At this, at the absurdity of what they were doing, at the very real pain in his side, at the fact that he couldn't make it stop, the fact that he wouldn't, even if he could. There was a kind of control in letting go, giving in.
"Our magicians are strong this year," he said to his father.
"But not too strong," said the king. "Tiran has chosen well. Let us hope the priests of Pharaoh and Vesk have done the same."
Rye's brow crinkled.
"I thought the whole point of this was to show our strength."
His father gave him a chiding look.
"Never forget, Rye, that you are watching a game, one with three strong but equal players."
"And what if one year Vesk and Pharaoh played to win?"
"Then we would know."
"Know what?"
The king's gaze returned to the match.
"That war is near."
In the arena below, Kell rolled, then rose. The dark water swirled and swerved around him, slipping under and around the Ferrowin's wall of air before slamming into her chest. The armor there shattered into light with the blow, and the crowd burst into applause. Kell's face was hidden, but Rye knew he was smiling. Show off, he thought, just before Kell dodged too slowly and let a knife-like gust of wind get through, the blow slamming against his ribs. Light erupted in front of Rye's eyes and behind them as he caught his breath. Pain burned across his skin, and he tried to imagine he could draw it in, away from Kell, and ground it in himself.
You look pale, observed the king.
Rye sank back against the chair.
I'm fine.
And he was. The pain made him feel alive. His heart pounded in his chest, racing alongside his brother's. King Maxim got to his feet and looked around.
Where is Kell? He asked.
His voice had taken to hardening around the name in a way that turned Rye's stomach.
I'm sure he's around, he answered, gazing down at the two fighters in the ring. He's been looking forward to the tournament. Besides, isn't that what Staff and Hastra are for, keeping track of him?
They've grown soft in their duties.
When will you stop punishing him? Snapped Rye. He's not the only one who did wrong.
Maxim's eyes darkened.
And he's not the future king.
What does that have to do with it?
Everything, said his father, leaning close and lowering his voice. You think I do this out of spite? Some ill-born malice? This is meant to be a lesson, Rye. Your people will suffer when you err, and you will suffer when your people do.
Believe me,
muttered Rye, rubbing an echo of pain across his ribs.
I'm suffering.
Below, Kell ducked and spun. Rye could tell the fight was coming to an end. The Ferrowin was outmatched. She'd been outmatched from the beginning. And her motions were slowing, while Kell's only grew faster, more confident.
Do you really think his life's in danger?
It's not his life I'm worried about, said the king.
But Rye knew that wasn't true. Not entirely. Kell's power made him a target. Vesk and Pharaoh believed that he was blessed, the jewel in the Arnesian crown, the source of power that kept the empire strong. It was a myth Rye was pretty certain the Arnesian crown perpetuated, but the dangerous thing about legends was that some people took them to heart, and those who thought Kell's magic guarded the empire might also think that by eliminating him, they could hobble the kingdom. Others thought that if they could steal him, the strength of Arnes would be theirs. But Kell wasn't some talisman, was he? When they were children, Rye looked at Kell and saw only his brother. As they grew older, his vision changed. Some days he thought he saw a darkness. Other times he thought he saw a god. Not that he would ever tell Kell that. He knew Kell hated the idea of being chosen. Rye thought there were worse things to be. Kell took another hit down in the arena, and Rye felt the nerves sing down his arm.
Are you sure you're all right?
Pressed his father, and Rye realized his knuckles had gone white on the chair.
Perfectly,
he said, swallowing the pain as Kell delivered the final two blows back to back, ending the match. The crowd erupted in applause as the Ferrowin staggered to her feet and nodded, the motion stiff, before retreating from the ring. Kell turned his attention to the royal balcony and bowed deeply. Rye raised his hand, acknowledging the victory, and the figure in silver and white vanished into the tunnel.
Father, said Rye, if you don't forgive Kell, you will lose him.
There was no answer. Rye turned toward his father, but the king was already gone.